Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
In an age where anyone can run a Facebook ad, anyone can start a podcast, like it's going to be harder and harder for people to tell who is credible. So they're going to start looking at who is saying what about other people, right? They're going to start watching the social order and the pecking order even more. And that's where podcasting can be super powerful, because when people listen to you on a podcast and they hear the other person treating you as an authority and treating you as an equal, that says something about you in the pecking order of your niche.
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust you also enjoyed my conversations recently with James Hayes of Developmental Edge and with Prerna Malik of The Content Bistro. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Matt Johnson of Pursuing Results, which is a podcast PR agency, and his team helps business coaches, consultants, and creatives own their niche or break into new markets through new media strategy and training, producing regular podcasts that allow his customers to have authentic dialogues with influencers in their target market. Sound familiar? Yes, that's right. We play in the same sandbox, and that sandbox is plenty big enough for all. So we had a lot of fun geeking out on all things podcasting today, so I hope we didn't get too much into detail, but I think there's a whole heap of valuable lessons there. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, that's InnovaBiz, where we help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal client. That requires absolute clarity about who your ideal clients are and how you can help them. To help you get that clarity about your ideal client, take a look at our Marketing Master Mini Class, where in less than 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity on your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. Access the Marketing Master Mini Class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. In our discussion today, Matt talked to me about the triumvirate of authority, visibility, and relationships. He explained the importance of being micro-famous by micro-niching, as he calls it, and focusing on relationships rather than on numbers. Numbers such as vanity metrics like download numbers. And he explained ways to get micro famous and why focusing on your ideal audience and clarifying your message is really critical for that. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Matt Johnson. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited today to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast from beautiful San Diego in California, Matt Johnson. Matt is the host of the Microfamous podcast, and he's also the owner of the agency of, well, the agency owner of Pursuing Results. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Matt. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Thanks, Jürgen. I'm really excited to be here. It's going to be a fun conversation.
Yeah, now you help businesses with done-for-you podcasting services, and you help them build and attract an audience, build influence, and you use the word become micro-famous, which is fascinating. I'll explore that a little bit more. You're also a host and co-host of a number of niche business shows and speak on stage about podcasting. So as a podcaster and producer of client podcasts myself, I'm really looking forward to digging into podcasting some more on our conversation today. And of course, it's very meta talking about podcasts on a podcast. So
the universe may fold in on itself at any moment.
that's right. But before we start talking about all things business growth and building influence and networking through podcast, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get to where you are today, and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
Yeah. So 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I was just some dude working at a marketing agency. And I had a background in the industry that we served. And so I got the opportunity to start doing business development and working directly with the CEO. And he had a really good idea, which is to do live webinars with the main players in the industry that they already had good relationships with. So I basically got the opportunity to start hosting live webinars. This is back when Google Hangouts was the new hot thing. Mm-hmm. And so because I had the background in the industry, I did more than just kind of play, you know, radio show host. I actually was able to ask really good, interesting questions. And so I started to get more and more of an opportunity to speak. And then people would start to ask like what my opinions were, because they could tell I was kind of an analyst of the industry. And so finally, one of the guys that I was doing these webinars with called me up one day and just said, "Hey, would you like to start a podcast together?" I said, "It's funny you should ask, because I was going to pitch you on the same thing and you beat me to it." So,
all right.
So he had this vague idea that he wanted to kind of scale up some coaching. And I was interested in maybe building some products and exploring kind of the online marketing world. And so that was the business plan, right? And so flash forward 4 years, 4.5 years from the start of that podcast, that has well over 1 million downloads in a pretty small space of residential real estate. And he is coaching. We have like a team of people that we've recruited over the years into his business that's well over 100 people, and it's doing well. Like, it was a fun podcast. It was named one of the top five in the space and had a lot of fun. But along the way, what I noticed is I ended up launching another podcast for one of my consulting clients. And that podcast was way, way more narrowly focused and was aimed at the early adopting affluent end of the real estate market. And it was insanely easy to monetize by comparison, right? So in my main show, I had this like mainstream audience within my niche. And then in this other show I was co-hosting, we had a super, super small, like high-end affluent audience. Right. We were delivering content that the mainstream just could not, they were not interested in. It was too deep, too tactical, too in depth for them. Right. And that was the podcast that was the easiest one to monetize. Within like a year and a half, I had helped my co-host on that show build a multi six figure coaching, consulting, and events business off the back of that podcast. To this day, it's still the number one lead generator for that business. And at one point, I had an equity position in it and stuff like that. So anyway, it was a really interesting kind of a study in contrast. And so I was able to see the difference between what I did stumbling out accidentally and building a mainstream audience versus going after a very specific defined niche. And I was able to compare the sales numbers because I co-hosted and ran both of them, right? And so that's the first thing that really turned. That was like a pivotal turning point for me. And from that point on, once I realized what I had done, I realized that that was what I needed to do more of. And so ever since then, I've been working in that space, mostly with business coaches, consultants, fellow agency owners that are in that same area, and helping everyone create these very niche, very focused podcasts that go after like a high-end, affluent, early adopting slice of their market.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there's a really good point in that. You talked about being an analyst and curator of the industry, and I thought that's a really neat way to go about it. But then you kind of pitched that at a broad audience and discovered that by niching down really narrowly, that that was actually a lot easier to translate into business from the podcast. And I think what that highlights for me is that it's not about the size of your audience. It's about, you know, how close the connection is, how close the audience is to your ideal client. And if you have a small audience that really is your ideal client, and you build the connections there and build the relationships there through your podcast, that actually translates into money a lot easier than chasing a big audience.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, because we both work in a very similar space with very similar people. And I think the biggest thing that I guess push back against on a daily basis is the chase after top line numbers, mostly for ego's sake, right? Because we work with ultra successful people, which is awesome. However, the downside of that is that the ultra successful, sometimes they get that way by being super competitive. And when that competitive nature gets taken into podcasting, the first thing they want to ask is, how do I build a podcast with 500,000 downloads? My first question for them is, well, which would you rather have, a podcast with 500,000 downloads or a podcast that generates you $500,000? Because usually those two are not one and the same.
That's right.
And and so, yeah, once you understand that, then it's at least if you can make that case, then people, sometimes that light bulb turns on and they can make a more, I guess, a more informed choice about which one they want. I did not make an informed choice. I just started out by putting out a podcast out there, and I happened to be, I happened to put two different types of podcasts into the exact same market at almost the exact same time. And I had the very rare opportunity to almost do a split A-B test. And it was, most people don't ever get that chance. And it, yeah, just the watching the results of that behind the scenes was really interesting, and it drove the case home to me. And so when I share that with people, then the light bulb turns on. They go, okay, you're right. I shouldn't chase the top line numbers. I should really create a show that the right people, the exact right people, are looking for. And that, to me, that's the secret of growing a successful podcast today with the explosion of podcasts that we have in the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, to me, that's a kind of fundamental principle of marketing anyway, because, you know, you mentioned statistics that are kind of vanity statistics, because whether you look at social media followers as a statistic, or, you know, how many people are opening your emails as a statistic, to me, that they're all vanity statistics. It's really about, you know, are you getting your message to the people that get value from it and building that relationship? And then is that translating to business? To me, that's a much better metric. And like you, I kind of drifted into podcasting at the beginning, thought it was a good idea, started enjoying it. And then as I went along, I didn't have the luxury of having that split test. But as I went along, I thought, hang on, I'm not following my marketing principles here. And then kind of narrowed it down and niched it down, and then started seeing things happen as I did that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I guess one of the problems, and I was filling out a form this morning to this, I don't know if you know, there's Podchaser have a new service now where you can register yourself for, you know, looking for guests and also looking to get on podcasts. So they're kind of building this community. And one of the early questions they ask, you know, if you're a podcast host looking for guests, how many downloads per episode does your podcast get? So everybody, that's always the question that comes up in that. And you think, well, you know, there's that vanity metric again.
Yep, 100%. Yeah, it creeps up all the time. And I get questions from clients all the time about podcast sponsorships and, you know, whether they can put their podcast on YouTube, because if they get, you know, YouTube subscribers, then they can look at monetizing their channel. My perspective on it, and I'm curious to get your thoughts about this, because we work with a similar market. To me, if you are a business coach or a consultant and you have any sort of high ticket offer, sponsorship should most likely be the last thing on your mind. Mm. Because to me, it cannibalizes one of those precious few call to actions that you could be sending people to deepen and strengthen the relationship with you and push them further towards signing up for your high ticket offer. And you're sending them away from you to some other company who maybe has their best interest at heart, but the bottom line is they're selling something different than what you do, right? Hmm. And so that's a controversial stance. Not everybody agrees with that, but I do think we make a mistake of thinking that things like sponsorship dollars and YouTube monetization and all this stuff is somehow like extra money. I don't think it is. I think we put it into a separate mental bucket, but what we're not seeing is the sales we might be losing because we're promoting something or someone else on a platform that really should be reserved for us promoting like how we can help our audience, if that makes sense. So I always encourage my audience to worry less about the downloads, because most of the time when they're worried about the downloads, they're angling for something like a sponsorship or YouTube monetization, something like that, right? And I have to get them off of track and get back to focusing on who their audience is, bring value to them. And let's, like, if you're going to focus on anything, focus on bringing more value to the audience to the point where they want to talk about you to their friends, because that's where your podcast is going to naturally grow.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. I really like that. And I absolutely agree with you. My take on the sponsorship thing, I mean, even before you get to the point of actually having somebody come on as, or, you know, promoting some other company on your podcast, getting to that point, you need to put in quite a bit of effort to get that sponsorship on board. And I tell people that, you know, the return on investing that time and effort is very low, and you're much better off, as you say, to build a strategy around what's your call to action out of the podcast and how can you follow up on the people that take that call to action and build relationships with them, because that's where it'll monetize, particularly if you're getting in front of the right audience. The other thing, of course, with sponsorships, even if you do land sponsorships, and this is where the vanity metric comes back into it, they're usually paid on a cost per download basis.
Yep.
So if you're in front of a highly targeted audience, let's say you have, you know, maybe 100 or 500 listeners per episode, well, they work on cost per 1,000 downloads. And, you know, it might be $1 or $2 or something. So you might get 50 cents an episode for that sponsorship and for all that time and effort you've invested in it. So it really doesn't pay off.
No. And it goes back to kind of the reason why I called the podcast this, and why the book is called this, Micro Famous. Yeah. I was thinking about like the friend limit on Facebook, right, is 5,000. I think that's a really good number, you know, and to think about in terms of marketing. Now, whether it's a good decision for Facebook, I don't really care, right? But the idea that you can have a limit of 5,000 personal friends on Facebook, because I was thinking about something, I think it was inspired by something Dan Kennedy said, and he was talking about his market, which is very similar to ours. And he just said, look, I don't need to be, I think he said something to the effect of like, I don't need to be famous to everyone, right? I just need the right people in my space to know who I am. He's like, and I've made tens of millions of dollars off of a relatively small audience of affluent entrepreneurs. And it got me, like, I was reading that around the same time I was thinking about this Facebook friend limit. And it made me think, I just asked myself the question, if I could never have any more fans or a social media following other than the 5,000 people I could be connected to on Facebook, do I actually need any more than that? And my conclusion is no. And I think that's the same for almost anybody that wants to build a multi-six and even into a seven-figure business. If you're famous to the right 5,000 people, I don't even know that you'd have to have any market beyond that. Because if you have a high-ticket offer and you have 5,000 of the right prospects, what else do you need?
Hmm.
And so that, to me, that's the goal of writing the book and running the podcast and just the whole branding around Micro Famous, is to kind of change people's perception, because we've been inundated for the last, essentially ever since Facebook got big, we've been inundated with, you have to be everywhere. You have to be on every platform. You have to have the maximum number of eyeballs, and you have to create content that has no other purpose than attracting attention, because the game is maximum number of eyeballs. And I reject all of those things. I know too many people. I came out of an agency that you can't pick them out on Facebook to save your life. And they're running a multi-million dollar category king digital agency that dominates their space. And you don't know who the CEO is mostly because he's not active on social media. They do everything against the grain. And it works. And I know a bunch of other people like that. Most of my clients are the same way. They are not the people that want to be glued to their phone. They might follow Gary Vaynerchuk for the motivational stuff, but they don't follow his example. They're not taking 15 selfies a day for Instagram stories, right? And they're all running multi-seven figure businesses. And so like when I look at guys like that and guys and gals like that, it's further proof, right? That the stuff that we've been inundated for the last 10 years is only one model of how to do it. Does it work? Yes. It's just not the only way that works.
That's right. Yeah. And I think that's important. It is one model of how to do it. And possibly, you know, if you think of the Gary Vaynerchuks of this world, they were very early adopters of that particular model. And in a way, that's how they got their breakthrough in that. And now I'd be interested to talk with Gary Vaynerchuk on this question, actually, now that that is the expectation his audience have of him, and he's got to post these three or four selfies every day on Instagram and come up with these ideas. Is that becoming a burden now? Because he doesn't need to do it anymore. I mean, he's probably getting enough money from all these enterprises that are more or less running themselves now.
So a couple of funny things about Gary Vee. because one of my friends who actually is based in Brisbane got a chance to hang out with him. He brought him in to speak an event. And so in exchange, he got to go hang out in Gary Vee's office in New York City. So Gary Vee has 19 people on his personal content team that is separate from the people that create content for the agency. That's just on the personal Gary Vee content team. So all Gary Vee does is show up and be Gary Vee and kind of do his thing. And then he's got a whole team behind him that slices and dices it into a million forms of content. So when Gary Vee says be everywhere, people need to understand, Gary Vee is just creating a couple of chunks of content and then it's sliced and diced from there. And the second thing is somebody sent me a clip of him talking behind the scenes to a local service professional. I think it was a financial advisor. And the guy asked him about Snapchat. And he said, look, man, if you're in a space like that, you're a local service professional and you need, and you're looking for a small niche group of clients, you only need to do two things, podcast and get on LinkedIn. And I'm like, well, where is that message while Gary Vee is shouting all the time on Instagram? Yeah. Behind the scenes, he's telling people, yeah, just start a podcast and get on LinkedIn, right? So I think we just have to understand that Gary Vee is selling the entrepreneurial rock star dream to all of us out here in entrepreneur land. And then he monetizes that by selling us a few books, but mostly by selling his service to big companies and then speaking to all of us who want to be like Gary Vee. Like, he has a completely different business model from what most of us actually do. And we all follow. So anyway, he's an interesting conversation. But getting back to like coaches and consultants, I think we have a lot of similarities to that financial advisor he was talking to, because we don't need to be famous to everyone. We only need the right, you know, let's say 5,000 people to know exactly who we are, what we do, and what makes us unique. And if we can just get known for that one thing, we're good.
Yeah. And I like that you said, you know, podcast and get on LinkedIn, because I'm finding I'm starting to abdicate more and more from Facebook, because I think there's just lots of rubbish in there. And I'm really focused on LinkedIn. And I see, you know, I've probably been doing that for about 6 or 8 months now, really actively focus on LinkedIn. And it kind of really is paying benefits just by doing a few simple things and maybe spending, you know, 10 minutes a day just going through the LinkedIn feed, which I think is really important, not just posting stuff, but actually going through the feed, commenting on other people's stuff, and also responding to people who comment on your own thing. So it's really about having conversations there.
I'm curious, because on the LinkedIn thing, I was just talking to one of my friends earlier today that runs a service in that space. Are you seeing, like when you're active on LinkedIn, do you get a lot of the kind of canned incoming messages? I don't know if that's made it everywhere quite yet. At one point, those services exploded and then LinkedIn kind of tried to shut them down. And so I was curious if you're seeing your market kind of be a little bit flooded with like canned messages and robo messages and stuff like that.
Yeah, a little bit. There's a few of those. I would say I get maybe one or two a day that, you know, is a canned invitation for request. And it'll basically be pitching their services or their product. And occasionally I will connect with someone and the first thing I get after that is a pitch. Yeah. And I think, well, I don't even know you yet. So there is occasionally that, but most of the people I connect with, and I'm very selective with whom I connect, because if somebody doesn't send me any comment, if it's just a, you know, request for connection without any further comment, and it's somebody I don't know at all, I'll have a look at their profile. But unless I'm really strongly motivated to connect with them at that point, I don't see any reason, because they haven't sort of taken time to tell me why they want to connect. Whereas if somebody takes that time and says, you know, we're in the same groups, or I listen to your podcast, for example, I get quite a lot. I listen to your podcast episode with Matt Johnson, really liked your conversation on XYZ, and how about we connect on LinkedIn? Well, that's one I will respond. I will connect straight away. And then hopefully the next interaction is then more around, well, how can we help? Or, you know, here's another podcast that where Matt was on as well, and he was talking about a different topic. Why don't you go listen to that? You know, so they're actually contributing to my know-how or understanding. rather than anything else. And then at some point they might come back and they say, hey, by the way, can we have a conversation about what we actually do?
That's what I found, because I started doing that years ago, probably 4 years ago. And yeah, it was, it worked really well for me. And now we're getting to the point where we are getting a little bit more systematic with it and turning it into what I would like, I would call it a, like a relationship accelerator system is what we call it in the book, but basically taking things, simple things that you could do that we all intend to do, like leaving LinkedIn recommendations, or when we post a podcast episode on LinkedIn, making sure that we tag the other person who's in that conversation with us. Like they're all simple things individually, but unless they're put into a system, usually executed by someone else and not us, the business owner, that's what actually gets done. But unless we actually take the things and put it into a system and assign it to somebody else and then monitor the system, the stuff just doesn't get done. And all those good feelings and good intentions don't actually materialize into concrete stuff, you know, actions that builds the relationship. And so, yeah, we're incorporating LinkedIn into that. And I'm glad to see that LinkedIn could get flooded with a lot of robo stuff and bots and, you know, VA sending messages and stuff like that. But I'm hearing that same thing, that we're seeing a little bit of an uptick, but not enough to where LinkedIn is losing its effectiveness.
Hmm. Now, you mentioned a couple of things there that I'd like to explore some more. I think that, you know, they're really key for most businesses. And I see you doing them really well. And that's around taking building systems for the work you do, and then taking those systems and turning it into something that can be a training program that others can use. So essentially you can sell it. So tell us about, first of all, what's your whole approach to that outline? And is it very strategic? Did you set about to build something that you can sell, or did you build the system to help your own work and then think maybe this is something that'll help somebody else?
It actually came out of the thinking process of how I wanted to grow the agency, along with what was the best long-term answer for the clients. And I think the best long-term answer for a business coach or a consultant isn't to pay an agency long-term to have your podcast produced by someone else, like a marketing agency like mine or yours. And so I was kind of struggling with that. Okay, well, like I see all these issues. I see what happens when someone's been producing a podcast for 1 year and then 2 years and then 3 years, right? I see what happens. And to me, the answer is every coach or a consultant needs an ally, someone on their team, just like Gary Vee has 19 people on his team. Mm-hmm. But we start somewhere. And I think all of us need a person on our team who ultimately ends up doing things like pitching us on podcasts, eventually can produce our own podcast, who can slice and dice that into micro content for social media, and who can do those relationship building activities behind the scenes, like tagging the other person when we post our podcast episode on LinkedIn. So I was thinking through all that stuff and just realizing, you know, like all of my clients are coming to me and saying, hey, I want to get on more podcasts. Can you help me? And so I seriously considered adding it to my agency's, you know, core service. We only sell one thing. So it was a big decision on whether I wanted to make it part of our one thing. And I ultimately decided not to, because we can't control it.
Hmm.
You know, with our clients, look, if you hop on and you record a podcast, everything else from there, I have 100% control over. That episode will come out, right? We can't control whether someone else lets you on their podcast. So I thought, okay, well, the best answer clearly is for somebody to be pitching them consistently, but it doesn't need to be us. So who's that person? Well, to me, that's a $12 to $15 an hour skill set, right? With the right training, the right systems. So, you know, a smart, capable, driven person can, you know, pitch somebody like a business coach on a podcast and get them booked. So I went through and created the training. I tested it on myself first. It worked, right? I created an internship. We took one of the interns and basically put them through this process. And now they're still with me, and they moved up and they're still pitching me and all that fun stuff. We trained a bunch of other people on how to do it. I started sending those interns to my clients and they started hiring them. And so the whole system kind of expanded from there, until now it's a product that other people can buy, and they can just take someone off the street, or they can take someone you find on Upwork or an online job site. Say, look, go sign into this, go take this training course, and you're going to learn how to pitch me and get me booked on podcasts. And literally within 2 weeks, they're sending pitch emails and they show up every week to calls with us and they just kind of follow the system that we teach them. And inside of a month, they're released and they're fully trained and equipped and they know exactly how to do it. And more importantly, not just how to do it once, but how to just consistently pitch that expert, that business coach, a couple of times a week, every single week, and get them an interview booked. So that was kind of the behind the scenes of that. And it all goes to where I think the ultimate goal that I'm driving to, which is not just for us all to be micro famous, but for every one of us to have that person helping us become micro famous, right? We don't need to solve that problem alone.
Hmm. Yeah. And I think that's it's a great way to go about it. I really like that in many ways. And I think it's a model for not just getting pitched onto podcasts, but a model for a whole bunch of different things. And, you know, if you think of the Gary Vee example, he's everywhere, but it's actually 19 people slicing and dicing one video that he might do a day into, if they just produce one bit of content and they're probably capable of doing a lot more than that, then, work it out how many pieces of content that is. So I think getting help to do that, building the system, testing the system, I like the idea of kind of, testing the system and then training interns and then handing over a trained intern as another kind of service for clients to really get them underway. Now, one of the things, I mean, I had a look at the outline of your system and I thought that's really nice. And there are a couple of ideas we had to add to our system. One of the things that as a host, if I kind of turn it around and say, as a host, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, is that, there's a wide range of, I'll just call it how good a guest is on the podcast. And that may range from, are they on time? Do they have good audio? Are they in a quiet environment? Are they 100% focused on the conversation right now? To what do they do after the podcast? Do they kind of pitch in and promote their own episode and so on? So I wonder what your take on that is, and is that actually in the whole training there, training the potential guest to actually do all the right things and come up so that they can come onto the episode so that they can show themselves of their best and deliver the best value?
Yeah, we don't. It's not a whole full-blown training course for the guests, like how to maximize guests, because a lot of that stuff is in my book already, and which they probably would have already bought before they are made aware that this podcast pitch assistant course exists, right? So the things that you just mentioned are probably the 80-20 rule. That's the 20% of effort that produces 80% of the results, right? Things like being conversational, being prepared, doing a little bit of homework, checking your ego at the door, right? So we talk about those things. I think there's one really good tactical thing, and I'll do it to you, by the way. So I'm going to give away my secret here before I do. But one thing I noticed from doing a lot of podcast interviews, and I don't remember where I stumbled on the question, but I started to ask people the question of, hey, who is the perfect type of person that I could introduce to you right now? Like someone that could refer you clients or someone who could put you on a stage or something like that. Like, who's that person that is like just like the exact right person you've been looking for that would make a huge impact in your business right now? And usually that gets a huge response because nobody asks a question like that. They definitely don't intend to follow up with it if they do ask. And I actually do because I track the number of strategic intros in my business, which I have for the last couple of years. It's one of the key things like behind the scenes I do to build relationships and generate business. And what I noticed about that is it started to create like a momentum, right? The more I would ask the question, the more opportunities I would get to introduce people behind the scenes, which would lead to more opportunities for me. It would also create that law of reciprocity effect where people would turn around and ask me, who can I introduce you to? And I would just tell them, kind of who I wanted to meet and who I wanted to have on my podcast at that point. And so I think that is a question that in just about any situation, any interaction, whether you're a podcast guest, it's amazing to finish off your conversation with the host that way. You could do it the same way if you're a podcast host. You could also do it the same way if you meet somebody in a networking event or in between sessions at a conference. You just end off with, hey, who can I introduce you to? Who can I keep an eye out for in my network that might be a valuable person to meet? And usually that will, just that response alone, will make you incredibly memorable.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a great suggestion. Now, I have a magic question at the end that I'll ask you, but I think I might incorporate that one as the part B of that question. All right. Now, so we talked a little bit earlier about making money from the podcast and getting micro famous and how's that. What's your strategy then at a very high level of monetizing the podcast? So you've got a podcast, you're in this very targeted niche, which is your ideal audience. You're starting to build that relationship. You're keeping the momentum going. So, you know, you've got past the whatever the number is, 13 episodes. So you've actually got the discipline to keep it going. And what are some of the high level strategies you should be putting in place to monetize it?
Okay. So for a coach, if you have a high ticket offer, to me, the thing that separates the people that monetize their podcast from those that don't are those that turn the attention into demand. And to me, the missing ingredient in that equation is influence. So the people that actually build influence are the ones that turn attention into demand, and then they turn that demand into sales. So then none of that stuff really happens automatically, right? You can, I mean, at best case scenario, you might accidentally attract attention with your podcast. That still doesn't guarantee anything. Yeah. It doesn't guarantee people reach out and book strategy calls, right? So if you're a coach and you want to sell more coaching, to me, the difference, especially in building influence, is you have to have three things. This is what I would say, like, influence rests on, let's say, these three pillars: authority, visibility, and relationships. Now, podcasting will make the visibility easier. Getting booked as a guest on podcasts will put that on overdrive, right? So you'll be visible consistently just by getting involved in podcasting. But it's the way that you get involved with podcasting that determines whether you actually build authority and whether you convert that into relationships. So when I think about authority, right, that has to do with your clout, which is what other people say about you. It has to do with your demonstration of credibility, you know, and your expertise, projecting that expertise into the market, demonstrating it in a real way, showing people that you know what you're talking about and that you can get real results for people, right? And then you have relationships, which is, I think, becoming more and more important, because as we go faster towards an age where everyone has a podcast or some equivalent, that's going to be less of a differentiator. So then what happens when everyone's an influencer and everyone has a podcast? Well, it's going to get down to this web of relationships that determines what the pecking order is in any given niche, right? So if you're the number one business coach in real estate, guess what? You make three times as much profit as the number two coach in real estate, right? And that's, I think we're going to see that happen more and more often. So if you start to build relationships to the point where other people are recognizing you as the leader in your niche, and you, the people that you're selling to can see that, and they start to get a sense that you're rising and maybe you're already on the top of the pecking order of your niche, that automatically builds the trust. Then when you show up to a sales call, the trust isn't the issue anymore. The issue is, are you ready to do what it takes? Do you believe the same things as I do? Am I the right person to get you the results, right? It changes the entire tone of a business coaching sales call. So I see this stuff all in action every day. And it's interesting, like, where we've completely left off, for the most part, the role of relationships and how people see us. Because we think we can just kind of build a coaching business out on an island. And I don't think we can anymore. Because credentials don't matter as much. Coaching certifications don't matter as much. Degrees certainly don't matter as much, right? And so in an age where anyone can run a Facebook ad, anyone can start a podcast, like, it's going to be harder and harder for people to tell who is credible. So they're going to start looking at who is saying what about other people, right? They're going to start watching the social order and the pecking order even more. And that's where podcasting can be super powerful, because when people listen to you on a podcast and they hear the other person treating you as an authority and treating you as an equal, that says something about you in the pecking order of your niche.
Yeah.
Right. Versus when they can tell the balance of power is a little bit different, and they can tell that you're being treated as a subordinate, or they can tell you're being treated as, like, people are honored to come on the podcast with you, right? Yeah, people can sense all this stuff at a subconscious level. So anyway, so when you're using podcasting, authority, visibility, and relationships, right? If you're consciously using podcasting in a way that builds those three things, that's what builds you actual, real, enduring influence in your space. And that, to me, is the secret from just being visible which is the low-hanging fruit of marketing, right? Anybody can just take somebody, a business, and make them more visible and make them a little bit more money. But that's the difference between going from visible and going to driving sales. It, to me, it's influence. And that's my opinion. But I hope if anybody's listening, I hope they agree. Hopefully I made that a persuasive argument.
Yeah, no, it's very persuasive. I like the triumvirate there that you've put together. And to me, it's, you know, if you think back to 20 years ago when we didn't have the internet, I think it was 20 years we didn't have the internet. No,
something
might
like
be
that, right?
Might be 25. Ooh. Yeah.
Oh God. Okay.
Yeah.
And we both need to have a drink after this.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, people kind of physically met up, or they might have gotten on phone calls, or you know, in the corporate world, we used to use video conferencing. But it was about building that visibility, building that trust, and building relationships. And I think what's happened in the age of the internet, and particularly with all this automation that's come up and, you know, social media, somebody said to me yesterday, it's actually social media, not selling media. So, you know, people have kind of forgotten about building the relationships part of it. So I think, yeah, you know, what you've pointed out there with that triumvirate and the relationship being one of the three points there is really important, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And it goes to your whole point of view, which is to make marketing more human. And I think this is 100% human, because humans are, we are social creatures, you know, monkey see, monkey do. Hmm. Seth Godin talks about this a lot, where you have to understand that most people are just fine with what they have. Most people are fine with buying what other people are buying. So it's going to be very hard to go out and convince them to buy your stuff. But you can go to the early adopters who want something new and want something different, and they want to take a risk and they want to roll up their sleeves and get involved and try something that's a little bit unproven. Go find them first. It's all driven by who we are as human beings. And if you know, for those that are selling business coaching, I think we lose sight sometimes that those same things that apply to whether someone buys a Mercedes or a BMW, right? Like some of those examples that are insanely clear that we immediately grasp, we lose sight of in the business coaching world, because it's all of a sudden, it's not a car, it's a person, right? It's Gary Vaynerchuk and Grant Cardone, right? And so when it's people involved, we get a little bit more tribal about it, and we lose sight of the marketing lessons, and we don't apply the same things we know from what cars we buy to what business coaches we hire. And we have to understand that the people that we're selling to are making the same exact decision when they go to hire a business coach as they are when they buy a Mercedes versus a BMW. They want to know, what is the one thing that you stand for, right? When I hire you, what does that say about me, right? Because I know what it says about me when I go buy a BMW versus a Mercedes, right? I know that BMW is the ultimate driving machine. It's not a prestige car, right? It's an ultimate driving machine. It shows that I care about the quality of the drive and the engineering and the performance, right? But then when we go to sell business coaching, we lose sight of the fact that that's exactly the same questions they're asking about us, right?
Yeah.
And so that, to me, that's a business coach that uses podcasting can answer exactly those questions by the way that you brand your podcast, by the way that you talk, by the guests that you have on, by the solo episodes that you do, right? You can change how you are positioned and the perception of you in the marketplace by how you run your podcast and how you show up as a guest, to the point where you deliver exactly the same impression as if it was BMW running a commercial, right? Mm-hmm. And you can have exactly the same effect, which is to create demand that causes somebody to show up on your doorstep and go, "Hey, I've been listening to your podcast for like the last 6 months, and I'm ready to go. Where do I sign? Where do I send my credit card information?" Like, well, let me tell you where to send your credit card information. I'm going to take it right now.
Yeah. No, that's a great example. And I think, you know, you raise a really important point there. It's like having that connection with the potential client and then looking at, you know, what are they being and what, you know, what do they think about themselves that is important to them, that's going to influence the decision of, you know, and it'll influence every buying decision they make, whether it's a car or whether it's a service or whether it's a business coach.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, exactly. Business guy, I could talk about business coaching and selling coaching all day long, as you can see. But yeah, it's really interesting to me. And I'll say one last thing about that, because I think there's one of the toughest things for business coaches, especially really, really talented, skilled, multi-passionate business coaches, which is a lot of them. I would say most of them, right? Most of them are really sharp, incredibly successful people that could do multiple, multiple things, which inevitably leads them in the direction of selling and offering multiple, multiple things, which is not a good thing. So one of the things I talk about in the book is just how important it is to have a single, clear and compelling idea that the coaching business is based around. Because like as a podcast production company and as a marketer, I've noticed that, look, if I can make the podcast line up with the business model and the messaging is perfectly aligned, then the podcast automatically creates demand for the coaching business that's built behind it. But if there's lack of clarity in the coaching business itself, and they sell multiple things to multiple different types of people, it makes it difficult to build a successful podcast because you can't get the messaging of the podcast razor sharp clear to a very defined group of people. And so it all flows, to me, it all flows back to the business model. The more clarity you have around what the core idea of your business is, the easier it is to do all of your marketing, including podcasting. So the more that you can make the entire idea of your business both clear and compelling, in the sense, that it moves people to take action, it grabs attention, it's arresting, surprising, positively polarizing, that sort of thing. If it compels people to take action and it's clear to them, not clever, clear, which is very hard to get people to choose, right? Clear over clever. Yeah. So if it's clear and compelling, to me, that makes it really easy. I'll give you an example. So one of my very first clients in the States, I've actually had two of these clients that has this exact same clear and compelling idea. They both built seven-figure real estate businesses that they were able to run in less than one day a week.
Mm.
Now, if you tell that to, you know, an estate agent, right? If you tell that to an agent, and of course, Australia is even more driven, you know, even more individual solo agent driven. There's very few teams in real estate in Australia. So you say that to a real estate agent in Australia, they're just flat out won't believe you. It breaks their model of how the world works, but it's true. And it can be done and it's repeatable and there's a process. So I've had two different clients who had that. And basically once people hear that on a podcast interview or they're featured somewhere, they can't unhear it.
Hmm.
Like when they hear it's possible to run a seven-figure real estate business that not only doesn't keep them awake at night, but they run it in one day a week, they have to learn more. And so if you have this, if the coaching is built around a very sharp, razor sharp, clear and compelling idea like that, that it makes everything else so much easier. So I think that's why it's so worth doing the work to find that idea, because once you do, everything else is infinitely easier.
Hmm. Yeah, no, that's a wonderful story. And I love the clear versus clever. You know, I've heard that from lots of copywriters in the past around headlines in particular. You know, there's kind of one trend in copywriting to make really clever, smart headlines. And sometimes you have to laugh over them. And sometimes they do actually hook you in and you think, oh, that's intriguing. I'll read more. But it's much better, as you say, to be really clear and you know what to expect. So that's great. Now, I could talk podcasting for ages with you, and I could also go down the path of selling to business coaches. But I think we might have to do a selling for business coaches one separately, I think, because I'm looking at the time here. I'm respectful of your time. I know you this is the last thing you're doing on your workday today, but it is a good time, I think, to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's a series of five questions that will help our listener our listeners are primarily innovators and leaders in their field. And we're looking for some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that will inspire the listener to go and do something awesome as a result today.
All right. I'll try to keep them short.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Talk to the early adopters. Ask them about their pain. No, because nothing else matters.
Yeah.
You can read industry articles and all that stuff, and it's all opinion, it's all whatever. But if you talk to the people that are on the ground running the most successful businesses in your space and you ask them what their biggest challenge right now, they'll tell you exactly what problems they're willing to pay $10,000 to solve right now.
That's great advice. And you know, you've outlined that quite a few times throughout our conversation today in the stories you've told as well. All right. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
That. I have one word answer to that.
I thought it might be the same answer. Yeah, it's good. Yeah. All right. And do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
Resource. I'm a voracious reader, so I would say that's probably my biggest mentoring tool. The biggest resource, the biggest tool that we use internally here is Trello. We run our entire business off of it, including my own personal productivity board where I store all of my backlog of things that I want to get done and all that stuff. So those two things, books and Trello. Mm-hmm. Those are my two favorite things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, have you read any really good books recently, apart from your own?
I'm going through Extreme Ownership right now, and I just finished Seth Godin's This Is Marketing,
which is
one of those amazing landmark foundational books that I think will be read for the next 100 years.
Yeah, that's a wonderful book, and you might find my photo in that collage inside the back cover, because I was one of the marketing seminar participants that actually contributed to some of those
that's
conversations.
Awesome.
Yeah, which was
very
fun.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
I think it starts with really clear expectations, and this is very hard for a lot of the same reasons for both agency owners like us and business coaches, because we deal with scope creep, which is we want to be helpful and we want to keep the client happy. But I think the thing that ultimately will keep the client the most happy is for very, very clear expectations to be consistently met over time. And the hardest thing to do that is when the expectations are constantly shifting. So if you're selling coaching, the thing I would most encourage you to do is package your service in a way that you really only have one main structure, to where the expectations when you onboard a new client are 100% crystal clear, because then keeping them happy over the long term is a matter of revisiting the expectations that were already made clear, as opposed to trying to constantly shift and evolve. So that's my perspective on that. I came out of an agency that sells one thing to one type of person. I built an agency that sells one thing to one type of person. But I've also strayed enough from that to feel the consequences. And it's not, by comparison, it's not fun. Now, it's hard to see the benefits until you've done it. But when you do have a system that just works over and over and over again to sell the same thing to one type of person, I don't think you'll ever go back.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's one of the key points where the real estate agents that you mentioned, the two examples, end up running a really successful, highly profitable business with just one day a week.
Yeah, exactly. Systems. Yeah. And they do the same thing over and over again. That's what a real estate team like that does. They list and sell homes, period. Mm-hmm. Like, end of story. That's their one obsessive focus. And yeah, I took that over into the marketing agency side, to where we launch and produce podcasts. Like, that's our obsessive focus, which is the reason why I created that course for the podcast pitch assistant, so that we didn't get drawn off into expanding our course into something that it didn't need to be. So yeah, it's focus is a never ending battle. I always recommend the Focus, the book by Al Reese and Jack Trout from back in the day. I love that book. I love all Al Reese's stuff. That's another resource that's phenomenal. It's a little long. Mm. It's ironic for a book on focus to be a little longer than it should be, which I think is funny. But anyway, it's a great book.
Yeah. I read it quite some time ago. I must revisit that one, because I agree with you that focus is so powerful, and the narrower you do focus, the more powerful that actually is. It's kind of in some ways counterintuitive.
It is. Mm. Yeah. Very much so.
Mm. All right. And what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think it goes back to the early adopters. If you talk to them consistently and figure out what pain they have, and they're going to tell you essentially what problem they would pay to make go away. If you solve that problem, you automatically differentiate yourselves, right? So I think there's a lot of twisting ourselves into pretzels trying to figure out how to differentiate ourselves. But what we're doing is we're trying to differentiate ourselves to the mainstream, when we haven't earned the right to go to the mainstream yet. I would call that trying to run before we can walk. Mm. So if we're willing to be a little patient and set our ego aside, right? And say, look, I'm gonna make myself more of a servant right now to the ultra successful, savvy, top end of my market, and I'm gonna go straight to them. If we do that and we find something that works, they will tell the people who follow them, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have to necessarily differentiate ourselves in the traditional way that we think about it, like with branding and with the cool slogan and stuff like that. Like, to me, that's getting way ahead of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Find a service that other people are willing to talk about, and that does differentiate you because you found something structurally that is different, as opposed to finding something that's the same and then trying to bolt something on that makes it slightly different from your competition. So I think a lot of what we do when we talk about differentiation is we're going from the wrong end. We're trying to figure out how to take something to the mainstream that we haven't even brought to the early adopters yet. And if we did that, it would solve that problem completely.
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice. And I think, you know, coming back to your point on focus, I think if you solve that problem for that early adopter niche that you've identified, if you solve their problem, but you do it absolutely awesome because you're focused on nothing else, but you're obsessively focused on solving that particular problem. So that means, you know, you're going to be doing all the research and all the skilling up that's necessary to do a really good job around that. Then, as you say, those people are going to talk about you to similar people in the niche.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's what you want. If you can't create something that's worth somebody else talking about, then it just makes everything hard, sluggish. You know, like if your first response is, hey, we need to build a sales page and start running ads, like stop everything, you know, right? That should be a massive warning sign to, hey, maybe we need to go back to the drawing board a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Matt. This has been really great. Now, where can people find out a little bit more about you, find out about the book and your service, and also perhaps even reach out and say thank you for what you've shared today?
Well, I would appreciate it. Love to hear from anybody. Simplest way, getmicrofamous.com. All my links are there, including the link to I did a masterclass recently about how to craft your story hook so that when you reach out to a podcast to get featured, they can't help but say yes because you write this amazing kind of story that you want to share. And so all the links there, including my social media, my website, and all that stuff is there. Just go to getmicrofamous.com.
Okay, that's great. We'll have that link on the show notes as well, so people can just click straight through. Now, a couple of questions before we leave. In fact, I might make it three. First of all, what kind of parting big piece of advice would you like to leave the listener today, particularly if it's a business owner though, or a business coach that wants to be a leader in innovation and in their field?
I think the best piece of advice I can give is to choose tomorrow over today. So business coaches can be incredibly impatient and driven and ambitious, and all of those are good things. Where it comes back to bite us in the rear end is when it causes us to make decisions that are short-term. And the people that I know that build the most stable, long-term, successful business think exactly the opposite. They consistently choose tomorrow over today. They do the things that bring long-term success. For example, they build systems. They create a long-term competitive advantage. They build enduring influence in the market. And so for business coaches, it's like, because we're so driven and ambitious and all this stuff, and we want to take over the world, it can be tempting to go straight to that when we're better off being okay with consistency and consistent incremental growth over time, because that actually builds a foundation that can withstand the test of time. Mm. And that's what I want. I want a business that not only does it run without me if I go away for a month, I want to run a business that can still has a good enduring competitive advantage 5 years from now, which in this day and age is not easy.
Mm. Yeah, I like the enduring success part of that. And that's really great advice. I heard somebody say, and I can't remember who said this to me, but I kind of picked up on it and thought that's really great. And it was, and I use it when I'm riding my bike actually a lot now. It's, you know, the pain of today will go away, but it'll be for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Now, the final two questions. First of all, who would you like me to chat with on a future InnovaBuzz podcast, and why?
Well, I've got a couple of friends down in your neck of the woods. So I'll throw some names out and you tell me if they might be a good guest. Because one of my good friends who's actually bringing me down to speak in your neck of the woods in May, his name is Glenn Twiddle. Mm-hmm. And he is, I would call him the Gary V of real estate coaching in Australia. And he's grown a multi-million dollar coaching business primarily off of events. And so he puts on the Real Estate Renegades event that has brought down everyone from Gary Vee to Arnold Schwarzenegger to Eric Thomas, the hip hop preacher, to Richard Branson. So he essentially went from running a small coaching practice to springing an exorbitant amount of money at great personal risk to put on his first major event with Arnold Schwarzenegger as the headliner. Mm-hmm. Like, he is a guy that makes things happen. I think he'd be an amazing guest to share what he does, as well as to share how do you get people to show up to your events, because he's got some really ninja stuff to go, whether they're paying or not, to get your attendance rate, your registration to attendance percentage, to get that from, let's say, 40% to more like 60-65%, which can be the difference between an unprofitable event or a profitable event. So he'd be an amazing guest.
Okay, sounds good. So we'll get an introduction to Glenn and reach out and have him on the podcast. And I guess I'll take a leaf out of your book and ask you, who can I introduce you to?
I would love to meet that same sort of person. So I would love to meet a business coach that has done something really innovative, especially if they've done something innovative in their business model. And I'll give you an example. I had somebody on my show recently that teaches people how to build group coaching programs to avoid the scaling trap of getting to the point where you can't scale beyond either yourself or small groups. So somebody that's done something really innovative, unique, and different in the coaching space, preferably someone that has a really good like one system or one package that they sell primarily, would be awesome.
Okay. Well, I can probably think of a few people that I've had on as guests in the past, but I'll give that some thought and get back to you.
Dip into the Rolodex.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and insight so generously with us today, Matt. I've really enjoyed this. There's been so many wonderful tips and kind of high-level structural bits and pieces that I think people can apply right across the board, whether they're podcasting or not. I think a lot of it applies to marketing in general. So thanks for all of that, and I wish you all the best, and let's keep in touch.
Thanks, Jürgen. Love to.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that engaging and really insightful conversation with Matt and took something away from his episode. His focus on serving the smallest viable audience and building visibility, authority, and relationships with that audience is what stood out for me, although, of course, we did have heaps of fun talking about all things podcasting, a common interest right across the board for us. I'd love to know what you took away from Matt's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Matt Johnson. That is MattJohnson. All lowercase, all one word, you know the drill by now, innovabiz.co/Matt Johnson. And you'll find contact information there for getting in touch with Matt, as well as links to the Pursuing Results website, and the free MicroFamous Masterclass, his MicroFamous podcast, his social media pages, and the other resources that we spoke about in today's conversation. Matt suggested we have a conversation with real estate coach Glenn Twiddle on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So Glenn, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Matt Johnson. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. But most importantly, it will enable you in less than 30 minutes to gain absolute clarity about who your ideal client is and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery, or our help with producing your very own podcast, even launching your very own podcast if you don't yet have one, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co and we can set up a quick call to have a short conversation and find out whether we're a good fit for one another. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got even more fantastic guests lined up, including confidence coach and podcaster Christina Canters and Kate Billing, founder and creative director of Blacksmith. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jurgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.